1649 to St. George's Hill. A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divides it, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. Men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim. Tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
This is an important community announcement issued on January 1st, 2018 from the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, ending the reign of terror against children, announcing Operation Atonement commencing on April 15th, 2018, Child Holocaust Remembrance Day. The routine trafficking, torture, and murder of children has become a lucrative global industry in which major church corporations are deeply implicated. The Vatican, the Church of England, and other churches stand convicted in common law courts of these and other genocidal acts. Your funding of and adherence to these criminal churches is allowing their wrongs to continue. On April 15, 2018, people in many countries will take direct action to stop these crimes by striking at their source. Operation Atonement is an ongoing campaign, and it will perform citizens' arrests against known child rapists and the church officials who aid them. It will peacefully occupy church facilities and disrupt their operations, and it will halt the funding and legal protection that enable these criminal institutions. These churches have betrayed their trust and lost the right to operate under the laws of God and humanity. We the people will no longer allow such wolves in sheep's clothing to exploit and brutalize our children. You can help save the lives of the innocent by joining this global effort. Here's how. First, boycott the Roman Catholic, the Anglican, Episcopalian, and the United Churches by denying them attendance and funding. Next, demand that your government revoke the tax-exempt status of these churches. Then, educate yourself and others about this crime and the hidden history and nature of these criminal churches. See www.itccs.org and www.murderbydecree.com. And finally, join the nearest Operation Atonement Action Group and directly halt these false and murderous churches. Contact itccsoffice@gmail.com to join up. And we ask you to share this announcement with a friend. Take action now to stop the war against our children. This is the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org. We thank you.
And welcome to Here We Stand. We're back. This is Kevin Anich, your host. We're back after a hiatus of about 2 months. Our last show was on November 12th. And welcome to all of you old listeners and new. A little bit of a background explanation before we get on to today's show. We took a break for 2 months because of some very important developments that happened. Now, for those of you who have been following us and know something of our work, you know that last September, we issued, as part of the work of the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, we issued a report on September 6th entitled A Report on the Continuity of Genocidal Crimes in Canada, An Appeal to the People and Governments of the World. This went out to the United Nations, to a host of different countries, to the European Union. It was read in the European Union, actually, and entered into their official record. And also it went to President Vladimir Putin. And it asked for a number of things, including for assistance, for peacekeepers to come to Canada and help people on the ground who are exposing crimes against children, not only the crimes of the past, of genocide in the, for example, the residential schools, but the ongoing child trafficking and murder going on, especially in places like the West Coast. We asked for peacekeepers. We asked for a campaign to bring sanctions against the Crown of England, the Vatican, Canada, and its churches, Catholic, Anglican, United churches. And in response, in early November, a couple of governments did contact us, the representatives. Not officially, it was a back-channel communication, but it definitely showed a positive response. For the last couple of months, we've been working off the radar with these governments to prepare a response. And Operation Atonement, the announcement you just heard about, is the result. On April 15th, there will be a movement beginning in both Europe and North America to directly stop and turn off the tap, if you like, of the funding and the legal backing of these churches that are responsible. Now, don't forget, these are not simply churches, but they're corporate connections. There is no real distinction between church, state, corporation when it comes to these crimes. We're going to talk about that today in more detail. And you can read a lot more about that at our website, itccs.org, and murderbydecree.com. Now, this is a very important development. It means for the first time we have more solid backing behind what is really up till now being, for many years, being a grassroots movement. That grassroots movement has kept its honesty and legitimacy, but we've been bereft of the kind of support that now we're going to be getting in the new year. So that's some of the explanation about why we're off the air. A little bit for the folks who don't know what Here We Stand is. Really, we began 3 years ago almost under a different name, Republic of the Canada, the Radio Free Canada. But now we realize we've got to expand globally. We are very much a voice of liberty, proclaimed and operating under the common law. And we recognize that the people listening today come from many different places, different experiences. But we are united in many ways, recognizing that the human race has its back to the wall. It's time to step away from a global corporate tyranny that is engulfing and destroying humanity, our earth, our children. And in the company of many, we're building up and displacing that tyranny. We're building up our own power, taking back our authority in our own communities through a new covenant of free men and women who recognize no authority except that established under the natural law and according to our own conscience. That's why we're here broadcasting live every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Greenwich time, and also in affiliation with our sister station, Blog Talk Radio in Scotland, Radio Free Anglia, we call it. That's every Sunday at 7 p.m. Greenwich time. That's 11 a.m. on the Pacific Coast. We're here not only to raise consciousness, but our capacity to reclaim ourselves and our world. So we're not only going to feature updates and interviews, but reports from frontline activists and training workshops on the air for freedom fighters. And in that sense, we have a lot of good resources, and especially the 8 books we've published over the last couple of years. A couple of them being, for example, not only the definitive work on a genocide in Canada, murderbydecree.com, the crime of genocide in Canada, but books like A Manual for Whistleblowers and Hellraisers, The Truth Teller's Shield, How to Navigate These Crimes and Fight Back Effectively Against Larger Enemies. Also, the Common Law Training Manual, the various books on the history of this campaign in Canada, and especially one I just published over the last couple, well, really the last week, In the Mouth of a Cannon, it's called. It's about the West Coast grabbing of land through the churches and corporations, that unholy triumvirate of church, state, and corporation that's still at work destroying the lands and was responsible, really, for the Canadian genocide. So if you put my name, Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T, in at Amazon.com, all of these books will come up, but especially go to itccs.org and kevinannett.com for some of the recent postings about that. Now, today I'm really happy to have with me Bob, and we can't say his last name because he's involved in a struggle right now, but I'm going to have him on the air in about 5 minutes. Bob is a citizen of Kelowna, British Columbia. He's a supporter of the Republic of Canada, the common law jurisdiction we have established under common law through which we work, because we don't recognize the so-called Crown of England or the Vatican or any of these institutions that have blood on their hands and have been found guilty of crimes against humanity and hence nullified under international law through the common law court case we did in Brussels in February 2013, from which Pope Benedict stepped down. And we can mention more of that later. But Bob has been working around a number of important issues, but he has a story today about what happened to his son, Adam, age 11, and how there is a move now on a new law in British Columbia whereby children can give their consent to their own vaccination without ever going through the parents. Believe it or not, it's a law which circumvents parents altogether and really coerces the child into agreeing to their own vaccination. Big pharma, big government at work again. And part of the whole bigger issue, which is the corporatization of the planet, means genocide. It means breaking up families. It means targeting and doing away, really, with any notion of age of consent and childhood. And it's a frightening development. We're going to go into it, but not simply to be frightened, folks, but to build an alternative. We're going to talk about what we do in Kelowna on the ground to fight this, as we're doing in many other communities. So Bob will be talking about that in a few minutes. Also, a number of things to flag. Folks remember from last fall the Grant Township in Pennsylvania, where the folks there fighting fracking, the drilling into their water and the dumping of toxic waste in that water. The folks of Grant Township, Pennsylvania, declared a home rule ordinance where they took back power and declared, no, you do not have the right to do this on their land. And what's happened, unfortunately, is the group that's backing them, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Project, is now being sued. The lawyers for them are being sued by Pennsylvania General Electric and General Energy Company and the Pennsylvania government. They're going after the lawyers and suing them for challenging what they called settled law. Now, settled law means that corporations have personalities under the law, and you can't prevent a corporation from drilling on your land because they're a person and they have rights under the Constitution. If you challenge that at all, you can go to jail now. And this is an ongoing development. In the weeks ahead, we're going to have the folks from Grant Township back on the air to talk about this latest development. But that's an update for, I know a lot of you were interested in that, especially because it was an attempt to bring in common law home rule in our own communities and, of course, the state and the corporations that, once again, getting together to crush any attempt of citizens' direct democracy. So we'll be having more news on that and how the Grant Township folks are fighting that and resisting it. Also, next week, hopefully, we're going to have a report again from British Columbia. Merv Ritchie, the journalist who's being targeted because of his exposure of the RCMP involvement in missing Native women. The recognition by Human Rights Watch and the Amnesty International that the RCMP have made Native women go missing. And anyone who starts mentioning that starts to feel the boot of the RCMP on their back. And we'll have more of that, too. An interesting revelation Merv has come up with is actually Mountie himself is being targeted as being the cause of the disappearance of many of these Native women, and we'll have more on that. So please tune in to future shows as well. Well, it looks like Bob is on the line with us. So without further ado, here is Bob. Hi, brother. How are you?
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and it's great to be back on the air again. I was just updating folks a little bit about our situation and your situation. And let me just ask you to tell the folks a little bit about yourself and what the issue is that you and your son are facing right now in Kelowna.
For sure. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a situation that happened with my son. My children are in middle and high school. It's basically the ages that they're at. So a single parent of two. And so this basically happened to my my youngest son. Really had, was the one that ran into it the most. He's 14 years old. The older one, he's just turning 19 next month. So he didn't really have any issues. It was mostly the younger one. But basically what had happened, so this is what happened to my son, is on December 15th, just kind of about a week before Christmas vacation, there was a huge media blitz that came out locally here about this this meningococcal outbreak. So that was kind of the media blitz that happened all the way through the Okanagan here, and that the children have to be vaccinated on Monday, and it's all very important. And so that was basically what kind of what was all over the news. And then, of course, you know, as usual, forms would be coming home with the children. So I get the forms here, and I've been pretty much desensitized to the whole word outbreak and who likes to use another term, basically. So I've been rather desensitized to it, so you know, I'm kind of more into like informed type of thing. So I got the documentation home and read through it, and discovered that, you know, they say in their own words that it's a low risk to actually spread through the population. And And this outbreak was 11 people, a whole 11 people. So by basically, from my viewpoint, was like, okay, well, this doesn't really look like of any concern to me. So I went through and I filled out the non-consent form, changing it around a little bit, of course, for legal reasons, and basically made it very clear of my parenting wishes of my child that is a legal minor of what is to happen here. So, and the students were also told when they come home, or that when they come back basically on the Monday, that if they had no signed form, that was an automatic consent and they were going to be vaccinated. So this was a very strict vaccination. Well, a lot, like other ones that have happened, they're basically kind of, it feels like it's, you know, kind of optional, it's up to you, whatever. But this one here is very, you know, strict, and very with the kids basically saying that, you know, if you don't have this form, you're going to get the jab. So I made sure everything was all filled out, and my son had that when he went into the school. And for my older son, he's past the legal age of consent of 16. So for him, he just took care of everything himself and just said no, and he really didn't have any issues on his front. But my younger one, however, it was a whole different situation. So got called in on December 18th, kind of in the afternoon, and they had it all set up there. So he was told to go to a specific nurse. So he gets in and goes to talk to her, and she basically starts up right away of what she's going to be doing. And then that's when my son presented the piece of paper that said no consent and that he's excused from this. And she then started to talk about why I would be saying this and this and that, and basically going through trying to, I guess, convince him to basically have the vaccination. So he made it very quite clear that, you know, he didn't want it either. And then she went and said to him, and these were her words basically here, that the form doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I say. It's whatever he says. And they don't have to inform me that the kid, my child, has been vaccinated. And they told him he doesn't have to tell me either, as the parent, that it can be their little secret. And that was the exact words, their little secret.
So you mean she literally, this nurse, came between you and your son and was encouraging him to not tell you?
Exactly, yeah. And then when my son came home and told me about this, he basically said that he felt really uncomfortable, and he felt like that he was really being pushed to vaccinate, and he didn't feel like it was no option whatsoever that, you know, this is something that was supposed to happen. So he was actually very uncomfortable when he came home and told me about all of this, and he was rather upset at the whole situation himself, basically, that they would actually say that. And that was basically, so the whole thing, like the last set of vaccinations that occurred, had already, with this infant act that they basically saying that they can, under the age of 16, which is legal consent, This is a legal child that they put this act together called the Infant Act in BC here, and that if basically the way it was explained to me, I'll get into that in the timeline a little bit here. Actually, I can just go through that in the timeline. It's probably a little bit easier than jumping around, actually.
Sure, go ahead, Bob.
So basically what happened then is that afterwards kids were complaining about headaches, and that most students basically had it injected in their arm. So the whole arm basically was numb as well. So that was basically the automatic side effects of these. And then just with my own research and that sort of thing, I've basically kind of seen where the person that's vaccinated is incredibly contagious for what they've been vaccinated with.
Yep.
For up to 10 days, specifically over the next, 5 days or something like that is kind of the hot spot. And then, of course, the vaccination causes a compromised immune system, so because it attacks the immune system. So what ends up happening is then it weakens it. So, you know, any old bug that's around, and hey, it's flu season, right? So there's incredibly high risk that kids are going to be contracting the flu. So about 2 days after the vaccination, kids were disappearing from school. They weren't showing up, calling in sick. My oldest said that in his shop class that only a few people were even showing up. Like it was just a huge amount of kids that were sick after this, so it's obviously from the vaccination. What else can it be, right? So then that was basically a couple of days later. And then my son, my youngest son, because of being around all of this, let's just call it bugs in general, about 2 days before school ended, before the Christmas vacation, I made the decision to yank him from school because they weren't really doing anything anyway. They're all wound down, just kind of watching movies anyway. So it wasn't as if there was any risk of losing any school time or anything like that. So I just made the decision that, you know what, I really don't want a sick kid over a Christmas break here, so I'm just going to take him home here. So I just called him in and just basically said he's on his Christmas break. And that was basically kind of the end of that particular segment there. So, of course, now that's what I was going to mention a little while ago, but I just wanted to kind of put it in the timeline here. So because the previous vaccination that had occurred, that, of course, I elected to have my children out of that one as well, the whole Infant Act was basically already on my mind, and I was already contemplating that, you know what, I don't really feel comfortable that this act is around. I feel that this is a way that any child can be basically taken advantage of here. I mean, how can a child make a medical decision like this, no matter what it is being told to them? That's the whole reason for having the legal age of consent, because it's it's well known that a child just isn't able to reason that. So, and then with this whole situation that occurred,
I'm going to just jump in for a minute, and in case people are following this, if you want to look up the Act, it's a British Columbia Act. The Infants Act, Mature Minor Consent and Immunization is what it's called. And and point here is that any care provider, it says this, before accepting consent from a child, a health care provider has to give the child information about the vaccine. But here's what they have to tell them: which vaccine they're to get, the benefits of getting immunized, and the risk of not getting immunized. So in other words, it's pro-immunization propaganda. And what child is going to say no to an adult who's saying all that? So just so folks know, that's what we're dealing with. It's direct coercion, really an act of violence against children.
Yeah, anyway, thank you for mentioning all that, Kevin. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's exactly right. That's what opens the door up with here. And that's what led me into, that this whole thing just made me feel really uncomfortable. And it's like, you know what? This, the whole reason for being a parent or guardian is to protect your child. And this felt like an attack to me. So.
Yep.
So I basically decided that, you know what, I'm gonna call. I have to make a phone call here. I can't sit by, and there's other children that are going to be involved here. My child got lucky because he stood his ground and said no, no, no. But other kids, they may decide, like you said, they're adults, so you're supposed to listen to the adult. That's the way kids are basically programmed nowadays, right? So basically, I made the phone call on December, 22nd is when I basically made the call in. I went through the school first because I wanted to see, how this whole process occurs and that sort of thing. And and I've determined that the corporation name is called Interior Health, and they basically take over and come into the school, and the school really has nothing to do with anything that's occurring. That's like they've rented out space, so to speak. So I was like, okay, there's no point in talking to anybody in the school, specific school system at this point, because I specifically wanted to talk to this nurse here, because I was a little... I specifically waited a couple days because I was incredibly upset for how dare you go over and basically say that my authority means nothing. So I had to kind of let myself cool down a bit because the whole point of this was to kind of go through and get some information. So make a long story short, so I call in and I traced the clinic where the nurses came from and called in there. At that particular point, all the forms that were sent out and the nurses have filled them out and that sort of thing, they were sent out to a third party to get dead entered, so there's no information on who exactly the nurse was. But I managed to talk to the team lead. Her name is Candace McCartney. So I was able to talk with her, and so she basically manages the local nurses there in that particular clinic. So that's when I basically was talking to her about, you know, what had happened, and so basically everything that I had gone through already. But then I wanted to, you know, basically, it was all around education, right? It's like, well, this is the legal age of consent. And then she specifically told me there is no age of consent in British Columbia, right? Right there. She said it.
That's a direct quote from Candace McCartney?
Yeah, that's a direct quote. Exactly. There is no age of consent in BC.
I would want to tell folks, urge listeners to call her and hear that out of her own mouth and challenge her over that. Her number is 250-980-5150. Candace McCartney, 250-980-5150. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes. Yeah, so that was like, oh, okay, and then she explained the procedure that, you know, any person that is basically holding that needle, as long as if they feel that the child is able to comprehend what they're saying, and my interpretation, the way that she was saying it, is that unless the kid's autistic, that means that they're able to give consent. So unless they have some sort of specific learning disorder or something like that, it's like fair game. So,
well, you know, Bob, it strikes me as really odd because it's as if they don't even know what the doctrine of informed consent is. This sounds like very misinformed consent. They're not telling the child the full facts, anything. So this is really a crime under the law, at least under legitimate law.
Yeah, and that's basically what I started to talk to her about specifically, was just like, well, you know, this is actually a Canadian thing. That age of consent is 16, right? And I started to mention the word legal and you know, saying specifically that, you know, this is the law. You know, you're not allowed to talk to a child. You must talk with the parent and guardian. And then now that we're getting into the subject of law, then that was pretty much the end of the conversation at that
yeah,
particular
point.
They
always get cold feet when you mention law. I wanted to, okay, first of all, to round this off, what's your situation now? Have they gone after Adam? Have they gone after you or what?
No, the matter seems to be closed from that whole aspect of things. Candace referred me to her manager, so I didn't quite get the name on the voicemail of who that is, but I do have the number here. I just haven't been able to get
in
contact
with
her as of today.
I've got a list of names here for Interior Health in Kelowna, but we can mention that. The CEO is a guy called Chris Mazurkiewicz. And operating officer for hospitals and communities, Susan Brown. Population health officer, Dr. Trevor Corneal, who used to work in the downtown east side of Vancouver, and I want to mention that because I've got a lot of personal knowledge of what they do to the homeless with vaccines down there. But go on. Sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. Yeah, you know, just jump in when you need to type of thing and add to it. You're doing great to fluff things out a little bit of things
so
that
are you,
I might
brother.
Miss too. So. But yeah, so then basically, I kind of stopped anyway because it's like, well, what exactly is my intent here? Because based on my conversation before and the way things are being postured, they're basically having the mindset that they've created this piece of paper. The other corporation for the BC government has. But anyway, this act has been created, this piece of paper has been created, and that gives them full authority to basically do whatever they want to do. They kept I kept on getting repeated at this over and over again as this act.
Well,
so
they're lying because it's a statute, and statute does not supersede your natural law. Your natural rights is apparent in the natural law, and we're going to get into that when we talk later in the show about solutions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things that I mentioned too with Candace too, is that I said specifically that this is a statute, this is an act. It's nothing to do with law. And if
right.
anything, of like those pieces of paper, when they break the law takes precedence. And and I couldn't even get into the morality of it, because pretty much at that particular point, as far as they're concerned, it's in this act, and you know they have full authority to do whatever they want to do, basically, at that point. So,
well, yeah, under their own statute, if nobody challenges them. But let me just broaden this, too. We're talking, first of all, we found out the name of the corporation that produces this. They're called Sanofi Pasteur, S-A-N-O-F-I, Sanofi Pasteur. We've discovered that one of the ingredients of this vaccine they're pushing is thiomersal, and it's mercury-based. It's produced by Eli Lilly, which is a notorious big pharma company in the States. But this is a mercury-based vaccine. And what do you know about, tell us a little bit about your own knowledge of this, Bob.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so basically, all vaccinations need to have this carrier in them. So every single vaccine has some sort of heavy metal in it, mostly mercury. That's been kind of the prevalent for many years. There's been some later decisions now that there might be switching over to aluminum, but it really doesn't change anything. It's still a heavy metal. So the amount of heavy metal that's actually injected into the bloodstream is an incredible amount, and then of course the same dose is pretty much, as far as I'm aware, is also to an infant. So, you know, it's the smaller the body, the more effect that it's going to have. So that's the reason why I think the kids in my youngest child school, I believe that's why they were getting sicker, because they're smaller and they're more affected by this large dose of basically what they're hit with. So there's actually some interesting medical videos actually online about mercury, if you actually want to, for anybody that wants to look this up.
Right.
Usually in university lab types of areas, you can basically find it in those venues. So they basically, the experiment was essentially taking the dose of mercury that's in these vaccinations and then applying it to live brain cells. And it was actually showing the neurons at the neuron level of how everything shrinks. So basically what happens then is that you have all these heavy metals that are being injected in, and then it's, you know, it's actually physically affecting the brain. And then, of course, the size of the metal molecules, if you want to put it that way, is actually, there's a risk of lodging these things in the brain. And that's where a lot of autism is being affected nowadays, and why we're getting such a huge amount of autism all over the place, right? And you look at the vaccination schedule, you know, there's an interesting correlation between these curves. I mean, there's a lot of other things in our environment that are a factor here as well, but my oldest child was specifically diagnosed with autism, so I had to get very well educated in this whole arena of things. One of the first things that I basically did with my older child is he was having learning abilities and autism spectrum, because you don't really know where in the brain that the heavy metals are going to hit. It's like a stroke, right? So wherever it hits for him, it was behavioral and memory and kind of the learning area of things of memory retention. So basically, one of the first things I did with him was put him on a heavy metal detox. For obvious reasons, all vaccinations were stopped from that year onwards for both my children. And then that's when we went through a heavy metal cleanse with him and went through a lot of different changes to what he ate and everything. Like, just had to change everything because he was really compromised. And,
right.
and now everything's turned around very nicely for him. He's getting straight B's and A's now. He's got an honor roll. He's doing fabulous now. He actually looked like he was basically had a stroke. He had no smile or life in his eyes at all.
What's the simplest heavy metal detoxifier people can do? I think you said vitamin C or something at some point, didn't you?
Well, if you go actually search online, there's some great recipes for there's some natural herbs and stuff like that you can basically put together. Just heavy metal detox. Just look it up on the web, and there's lots of great recipes on there.
Okay.
There's also companies that specifically sell heavy metal detox,
right.
So you can actually take something specific that they formulated that works quite well.
Now, Bob, I want to talk a little bit too about who's behind this. We've mentioned local people on that, but the Interior Health is actually a component of what's called the Provincial Health Services Authority. It's under the BC government, British Columbia government, health ministry. The minister is Adrian Dix, D-I-X, and you can actually reach him if people are upset about this, want to call, 604-660-0314. At 660-0314 to get Adrian Dix. That's his constituency office. You can also reach him through the ministry, the health ministry. But here's a really disturbing thing. The Provincial Health Services Authority works directly in partnership with the Catholic Church, what's called Providence Healthcare. Now, this is directly relevant to this whole thing, Bob, because Providence Healthcare is the agency that, for one thing, it is responsible for the death of a lot of homeless people. I've seen these Providence Health street nurses literally shoving needles in the arms of homeless men, Native men primarily, who subsequently die. And in St. Paul's Hospital, under Providence Healthcare, that's where our friend William Coombs was killed. And we have, you know, I'm going to mention that in a nutshell. He's the one who saw the Queen Elizabeth take those children out of the Kamloops Catholic School. He was going to come to England to give testimony about that. He's ordered down to St. Paul's Hospital, run by Providence Healthcare. And I have just this last month received a written statement from the nurse who worked with William, claiming that, in her opinion, he didn't die of tubercular meningitis, as they claim. It was arsenic poisoning. He had all the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. And she was removed from watching him when she complained about it. So what I'm saying by all this, Bob, is that Providence Healthcare is a criminal agency connected to the Vatican, and they're working directly with the BC government through the very agency pushing these vaccines and now having the authority to just force, you know, this on children. So I wanted the listeners to know the bigger context of this. It's the same kind of genocidal agencies at work.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that I've noticed as well, is that this, this is a drug that we're talking about here, and then this soft name is put on it about calling it vaccination, and then now all of a sudden everything's all nice and warm and fuzzy here. And then, but that's one of the things I was educating Candace on as well, is that this is a drug. This is something that should be prescribed by a doctor and then made a personal or professional decision on whether this should even be done. Like, how can everybody be the same here? And then that's one of the things that I was pressing upon there as well, is that this is a medical procedure as well.
Right.
Excuse me. How can a child actually be informed to be able to do this? And that's
well,
one
they can't
of the things
be. You
that,
know,
sorry, go ahead.
Well, this is like more Trojan horse legislation, where you know the bigger agenda is not obvious at first, at least to the uninformed. But you know, to separate children out from their family, it's part of the. What does that sound like? That's exactly what happened in the residential schools under the Indian Act.
Yeah.
It's
well,
like we're all on the reservation.
That's one
now,
of the
people.
Dangers here that I wanted to basically, that's why I agreed to come, you know, forward here, is that, you know, it's one of the key things, is that this legislation is dangerous. This is causing a precedence here of, you know, your children that a parent or guardian doesn't matter anymore. Like, what is going on here? Like, this is wrong, and this has to be changed. And that's what I'm putting up the flag about here, is that, you know, that we, our children's children are affected here, and you know, if they're to be able to just talk to a child and through non-informed consent, basically go into a medical procedure. I mean, what's next? This act is going to be changed so then they can get sterilized now and they have consent for that, or sex?
Well,
change?
If you look at the Federal Health Act in Canada, they brought in a couple of years ago. They now have the right to go in and seize things out of your house without a warrant, to arrest you for reasons of public health. I mean, this is something to understand. Genocide is always presented as a public health measure. When the Nazis were doing it to all sorts of people in Germany, not just the Jews, but others, they were targeting them as people who needed to be put into protective custody for health measures, right? And the same thing happens in Canada right now as we speak. So it's part of the general assault, Bob, and I think in the last 20 minutes we got here, 15 minutes, unfortunately, an hour goes quick on this show, but
for sure.
let's talk about solutions. What's your first response about what you want to do about this? And we can go into some alternatives.
Well, specifically, I think we need to, I think officially sending these people a piece of paper that basically saying that, hey, you can't hide behind an organization here, and you have to be, you're an individual here, and you're making a decision about this child here, and I'm just following orders, or that's what my employer told me to do. I'm sorry, that doesn't hold any water here. This is something that you've made a decision to do. So that's where I'm going with this whole thing, is that when you are making a decision of injecting this child here, like legal minor, what if are you actually doing here? Like, this is, you're actually breaking the law here.
Now, that's exactly what people first have to do, put in writing and cite the Nuremberg legal precedent, because they actually say in those precedents exactly what you just said. It came out of the United Nations in 1950, and it's a principle of international law based on the Nuremberg trials. And it basically says no one can claim that they did a criminal act because they were ordered to do so. That's not a defense anymore under the law. You are a moral being responsible for your own actions, regardless of who told you to do it, regardless of whether it's part of your job description. It's not a defense under the law. So Candace and others who are doing this on the ground need to know that they can be held personally liable and be hauled into a court and be tried for any consequence of their action. So they can't hide behind the government, a church, a corporation, anything. That's basic to the Nuremberg legal principle. So this is stuff we will be teaching people. And one idea, Bob, in terms of Kelowna, is to, we've talked about this, perhaps holding an event where people can be brought and trained in the common law so they know how to respond to this. Because of another incident that happened in Kelowna that we know about with somebody we both know, this person simply wrote to the government challenging Crown authority that same day their children were both seized by the Ministry of Children and Families, and they were then subsequently threatened with lawsuits. Can you tell us a little bit about that case?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so like you were saying, basically in the morning there was an email sent out, as you were saying there, communication sent out, and then that afternoon this lady by the name of Gabrielle Stickle, who works for Child Services, accompanied by the RCMP, came to his home, and he was put in handcuffs, physically restrained, right in front of his children. So now there's a terrorization going on with the children here, and then now the kids were forcibly removed and kidnapped by Child Services here. And from what we're seeing here, it looks like it's all around just simply sending this email. I mean, how can that possibly justify children being taken here?
Go ahead. You were talking, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So then subsequently when it ended up happening here, then, obviously he's very distraught about this whole situation here. So he had visitation. The kids were put in a foster home and he had visitation. So they did the usual thing, at a there's a center or something like that where they basically meet up with his kids, and he discovered that his kids are being sexually abused there. And then when he brought this up, then all of a sudden he has no visiting privileges now. And then now I won't get into too many exact details on what's happened here because I want to protect the identity here, but just to kind of keep more in summary form here, make a long story short, then at this particular point, then a fellow by the name of Curtis Baker, also from Child Services, then went to the court and got a restraining order to basically protect this pedophile foster home. And so then he's then and basically told them that he had to then his kids are basically held hostage at this point. And then they told him, in order for you to see your kids again, you're going to have to do these things. And I won't get into those details because I just want to protect the identity here. But
right.
But basically, you know, he had the whole coercion thing here and actually going to the court. And it looks as though this Curtis Baker actually perjured in court to basically manipulate the situation to get this injunction here. And it looks like we're going to be able to get him for perjury from what I'm seeing here. So it's quite amazing how the system is, the way that it's set up, this can be so manipulated, and there's obviously a vindictive thing going on here to kidnap children here, and now they're being sexually abused in the system. And
not just perjury. Curtis Baker is aiding and abetting child rape. He's using his government position to do that, the Ministry of Children and Families. And considering that the MCF was run for a number of years by Chief Ed John, who's a known child trafficker from the northern regions of British Columbia, it's not surprising that these crimes are going on. But here we have it. There's three criteria for being targeted by the government now. If you object to vaccinations for your child, if you object to child abuse, and if you challenge Crown authority, any of those three, you're instantly targeted. Arrest, harassed. This is a police state, people.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I wanted to come forward public as well, just to ensure that, you know, my children aren't targeted for some vindictive thing as well here, right? Cause
we've got to rally around.
Trace who I am pretty fast, so that's the other reason as well here. And then all about the workshop there, and that's one of the things that, you know, you said, we've been talking about here is putting together a workshop here so people can understand the common law, and because many people think these statutes are laws. And what I'm finding out with what I have to do first when I'm talking to people is to educate, to say, no, that's a statute. That's nothing to do with law. And one time I had a situation just in the local park here with the RCMP officer, and I had to educate him. I say, no, this is a public park. You don't have this authority. And it was all great. You know, he understood, and we parted ways, and no ticket, no nothing, and everything was fine. But I just wanted to bring it up that, you know, even the RCMP seemed to be actually in their training as to violate these, you know, basic human rights. And, you know, and that's wrong. You know, like, we have to go back to our common law roots here and flush these things out of the system here and make sure that, you know, we have real laws that are being protected here and not these fake things that are put out there that everybody is looking at. And that's one of the first things I find is that education is needed.
Education, first step, and involving sympathetic police in it as well. This is when I mentioned Operation Atonement. We've done this in other countries as well as in Canada, where we get police on board helping us. Because they're fathers and husbands too, and they need to be. It's a struggle for hearts and minds on this whole campaign. And one thing we need to do as well is to remind people that a statute, and this runs right through all the legal decisions, not only primarily in the United States because they're founded on the common law, unlike Canada, which is crown-based authority. But in many American decisions, going right up to the Supreme Court, time and again they say a statute from government has no binding authority without the consent of the governed. So if you don't give consent to a statute, it has no authority over you. It's that simple. And that's, we have to ram that point home with people. They can say and need to say no to these criminal bodies that are operating under the guise of government.
Yeah, and then in the city, it's called a bylaw, and they're very specific, bylaw, beside the law. So they even say it in their whole thing, that it's nothing to do with the law, but unfortunately it has the word law in it, so people are assuming that it's laws. And, you know, then there's people that actually enforce these bylaws from that side of things. And that's one of the things to remember is that when this bylaw officer is coming to you and he's asking for identification, you don't have to give it to him. You only have to give the officer of a court and the RCMP your identification, never these quote-unquote officers. I can call myself an officer and wear a costume too. Like, it doesn't really matter, right? So, those are the only two people that can ask for your identification.
They can ask all they like. You don't even have to talk to them. If you want to talk to a cop who confronts you, you say to them, tell me the probable cause. You have to act on a probable cause. You can't just harass me. So what's the cause? Let's either see a warrant or give me a reason why you're even talking to me. And they always back down at that point, unless they want to arrest you. But that's why you should always do things with witnesses around. And which brings us to what we do, because right now, Bob, I don't want you to say anything about your situation because, you know, that might compromise things a bit, but I do know from our work that there's a lot of support we get from the central interior part of British Columbia. There's people all around Kelowna who we can bring in on this. So I want to put that out to people listening. If you feel like giving out your email or anything, you could do it now, Bob, because I need people to, who are listening to contact Bob, and we're going to set up a group around you to start doing these actions, common law training workshops, public actions to confront these crimes in Kelowna. So do you have any contact info you can share?
Yeah, my email address is probably the best thing, and then we can just kind of go from there. It's bob@creativeharmonicsolutions.com.
That's solutions plural?
Yes.
bob@creativeharmonicsolutions.com?
Yes.
Perfect. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want you to, we'll obviously have you back on again, but is there any final message you want to leave with folks or things you want to say that we missed?
It's basically, it all comes down to when I'm talking to people about the common law, and that has jurisdiction over everything here. And that's one of the things that I really want to emphasize with people is that we really need to, it all comes down, from spirit law, and that's where the common law is basically spawned from is, the laws of man as spirit is presenting itself on this planet here. And it's one of the things that, like, all of us are the same here. Like, it doesn't matter what country you're in. This is all international stuff, And that's one of the things I wanted to emphasize with people is that, all this convolution that's out there, it gets very confusing when it really just comes down to one thing of do no harm. And that's really what it comes down to. So
right.
For the people on the front line, on the nursing side of things here, is one of the specific subject matters that we're talking about here is that, are you doing harm here? Like, what exactly is happening here right now? And you have to challenge your employer and basically say, hey, this is breaking the law here. I don't feel comfortable with this. And that's what I really wanted to just emphasize and drive home here is that, these statutes have nothing to do with the law. And then really what the law is, that if you can get out of that, I mean, what makes sense? Like, what is moral? And that's what I think that everybody just walk down the street and just be in your truth. And that is basically, I think, will in the end of the day will prevail on this planet. And these false systems that are around us here, I mean, if we're going to be putting power into them, I think we really need to kind of be looking at that and is this the right thing to be doing?
Exactly. Well said, brother. Thank you. And we'll have you back on again soon. Final question. Do you have, as it stands now, you're not in a position where you've received direct threats, but is there, I'm assuming there are other people in Kelowna who've known about what's happened. Is that true, or?
They would know my, there's not too many details about it. I basically kept, pretty quiet about the whole thing from that
right.
sort of things.
Well, it's a good policy we have a group.
Everything's fine. The people that I have talked about this and they understand, but at the same token, everybody just lines up and just does this sort of thing. So, everything's fine on that front.
Well, it's always a minority that leads initially, and we have to organize that around you so that you're not alone. But, it's funny, a lot of people who are involved in our network are living on their own in these small little towns, and it's a real art to know how to operate on your own in a bold way and yet in a wise way as well. So thank you for being with us today, brother, and for your witness, and we'll stay in touch, be in touch again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to get this out to people, and I know that there's other people out there that see what I see here with these acts and everything like that, and it's easier just to kind of go along with it, and we can't do that. We have to stand
right.
up for our children here, and they're being attacked here, and how far is this going to go? You give allow these people an inch, and they're going to keep going with it. You leave this door cracked, they're going to pry it open, right? We have to slam this door shut and seal
right.
it and make sure that our kids are protected and their kids. And
thank
just,
you, brother.
It's just out of control.
Thank you for your courage and your witness. We'll talk again soon with you.
You bet, Kevin. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
For being
have
with
a wonderful
us.
Day.
You too. Bye for now.
Many blessings.
And that was our brother Bob of Kelowna, British Columbia. For those who want in touch, again, he gave his email, but also reach him through thecommonland@gmail.com if you missed his email, and we'll pass that on. In the last few minutes, I wanted to remind folks of something very serious about this. Our brother William Coombs, who was a witness to the abduction of children who never came back, They vanished off the face of the earth on October 10th, 1964. Eyewitness William Coombs saw Elizabeth Windsor, so-called Queen of England, and Prince Philip take those children from the Camelot Catholic School, vanished, never seen again. William died shortly before he was to give public testimony about that. We have a written statement from a woman, Erica Kelly is her pseudonym. She's a nurse, former nurse at the St. Paul's Hospital, run by Providence Healthcare in Vancouver. She claims that he was killed by arsenic poisoning, that two men in suits took her off the constant care watch and was interrogating her about what he was saying. And clearly we believe he was killed medically, and here's the proof. We're going to get into more of that as we look at the medical genocide perpetrated by Providence Healthcare, the Vatican, and this, of course, relates to our broader campaign of Operation Atonement. And just in to remind folks, every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time is our sister program from Scotland. We'll put postings of that soon on itccs.org. And especially stay tuned over the next week for more information about how you can get involved locally with Operation Atonement. And this is also, it's got many various levels to it, and we can get into that in more detail. If you want direct communications on this and how to organize a group in your area, please write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. It's as simple as finding out basic information, what's going on in your neighborhood, refusing to attend the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches anywhere in the world, refusing to give them money, don't even rent their halls, tell them why you're not renting their facilities because they killed over 60,000 children in Canada and are still trafficking children. Take direct action. That's the power of local grassroots movements like ours. You can affect that, but it depends on all of you to do more than listen, but to get out there and start acting. Wisely, but boldly, as we often say to people. It's been an honor to talk to you all again. It's great to be back on the air again. We'll be here again next week on the 28th. And for those folks in Nanaimo who are tuning in, I'm going to be on CHOI Radio Nanaimo 11 a.m. next Sunday. Next Saturday, the 27th, interviewed by Bob Hansen, about the recent censorship of material at Vancouver Island University, an article written by myself about the Nanaimo Indian Hospital, where children were murdered medically. That article was pulled from the Navigator newspaper. As a matter of fact, the whole issue was seized after it had been published to stop that article from getting out. So we'll be talking about that more. And we thank you for being on the air with us. We'll hear you again next week, same time, same place. Until our brothers and sisters, go to itccs.org. And stay strong and stay clear and active. This is Kevin Annett. Bye for now.